I offer my most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. I pray to Swami that He gives us all the understanding that it is Swami who speaks and it is Swami who listens through all of us. Elders, sisters and brothers, Sai Ram to all of you. The Bhagavatam has a very beautiful description of the nature of the Lord. It says, imagine a child playing with a mirror. The first time a small child is handed a mirror, the child is thrilled, the child is amused. It makes faces at the mirror and it sees the faces being reflected. It frowns, it laughs. The Bhagavatam says that playfulness of that child is the nature of God. That playfulness, that mischief, what we refer to as leela, is an essential aspect of divinity which becomes more enhanced when the Lord chooses to take a human form. Swami too says the same thing, isn't it? Swami would often say, my life can be divided into three distinct parts. The first 16 years will be the years of leela. The next 16 years will be the years of mahima, and thereafter the years of upadesh. But Swami would be quick to point out that at no stage the leela would stop and no leela would be performed without a profound upadesh or a message. Why does the Lord play? Why the leela? One of my classmates who comes from a family of devotees, who comes from very far from Puttaparthi, is brought up in this family which always worshipped Swami, right? You had Rama, Krishna, Devi, and you had Swami in the altar. So Swami was that supreme divinity, distant, dignified, but distant nevertheless, great, but not dear yet. So this boy joined Vrindavan along in the same year that I joined. And eventually Swami started speaking to him. So you could imagine the boy who had always looked up to Swami's image as that of divinity is now in front of that divinity, is filled with awe, filled with reverence. So Swami began calling him for interviews. And he could not take his eyes off Swami. He was always looking at Swami with immense reverence. He was going on seeing at Swami. He was not able to ask anything to Swami. So one day Swami calls him for an interview. And those of you who have been to Vrindavan, it's always a silent place. But interestingly, when Swami is there, it has a different kind of silence. The place would be filled with people, but there would be a silence which, during the other times of the year when Swami is not there, when there is no crowd, we wouldn't feel that silence. Those of you who have experienced it will be able to understand what I say. So Swami calls him for this interview and he goes inside Trai Vrindavan, goes into the interview room. And that silence is almost meditative. So he is lost in that. He is thinking, this is God's abode and I'm going to be alone with God. And he is lost in that personal reverie and reflection. When all of a sudden, boom, Swami jumps out from behind the curtain. Swami has been hiding there behind the curtain to surprise this boy. How old was Swami? 75. The leela never stops. And this is precisely why the Lord does leela, because you have to look at Him and say, He's my Lord. He's mine. Right? That that ability to relate to him comes when the Lord becomes playful. And when you talk about Leela, if there was an avatar which literally embodied this nature of the divine, it was the avatar of Krishna, right? That's why we refer to the Krishna avatar as a Leela avatar. It is literally a descent of divine playfulness. That's what the Krishna avatar is. And I'm sure most of us are well informed about the various stories from the life of Lord Krishna, the various pranks that he played, how he went about making fun of the gopis, how he played with his playmates, how he gave so much trouble through his mischief to his mother Yashoda. And among all of these leelas, the Bhagavatam gives the highest place, the most supreme place, to the leela called Rasa Leela or Rasa Krida. It is very profound, but it can easily mess up with the mind too. That is the nature of this leela. The Bhagavatam says, and I think it's appropriate to quote it now as well as later, that whoever listens to an exposition of the Rasa Leela with reverence and with faith, whoever narrates the sequences which constitute the Rasa Leela with reverence and faith, both will be blessed with supreme devotion, Parama Bhakti. That is the nature of this leela. Merely listening to it, merely contemplating upon it, can sublimate the impulses of the mind. But before we begin talking about the Rasa Leela, before we go into the details of this beautiful play of the Lord, there are two things that we have to keep in mind. Both, of course, points that Swami reminds us of. Point number one, when all of this was happening, the age of Krishna was about 8 years. Popular culture always portrays Rasa Leela as that happening between teenagers. But when Krishna leaves Vrindavan for Mathura, he's just over 10 years. So all of this happens when Krishna was 8 or 7 years old. So that is one thing that we have to keep in mind even as we listen to this. And the second and more important is that we are talking about Krishna. We are talking about the Lord. We are not talking about any individual. We are not talking about any small kid. We are not talking about any teenager. We are talking about the Lord. We should never forget this. In fact, when Sukha Maharishi is explaining to Parikshit, when he starts talking about the Rasa Leela, he loses himself for a few minutes. He's not able to continue with his narration. He's lost in that ecstasy of that recollection. And Parikshit very hesitantly asks, but how? Why did the Lord do this? This seems to be a play which is done under the influence of the gunas, right? Somebody who is under the grasp of the attributes of the mind, the flaws of the mind, would only indulge in a play like this with other women. So he puts forth this doubt to Sukha Maharishi, and Sukha Maharishi laughs and he says, don't forget whom we are talking about. And what does he tell Parikshit? Have you forgotten? We are talking about the Lord whom entered the womb to save you. You had the darshan of the Lord in the womb of your mother. He is omnipresent, omnipotent. We are talking about him. Never forget that. And he said, the only armor that you can have against the doubts which raise in the mind when you listen about the Rasa Leela is the armor of faith. Remind yourself again and again, you're speaking about the Lord. And then Sukha Maharishi says, you're talking about being under the influence of gunas. Sukumar, she says, look at me. Among all the sages and ascetics in the Sanatana Dharma tradition, Sukumar, she is given the highest place. First of all, he is born to sage Vyasa, who is supposed to be one of the greatest sages. But Sukumar, she is said to be purer than even Vyasa. He is born with complete wisdom. He is born with complete renunciation. Some stories say that as soon as he is born, he walks away to the forest. He renounces everything. Such control over the mind. Such a lord. There is a beautiful story where Sukha Maharishi is walking through a forest and behind him is following his father, Sage Vyasa, both perfected individuals. At one particular point in the forest, there is a pond where divine damsels are having their bath. Sukha Maharishi is so perfect that he is described as somebody who never wore clothes because he had the mind of an infant. He had absolutely no body consciousness. So here there are these women in the middle of this forest having bath. And this young boy, young man walks and he's wearing no clothes. The divine damsels look at him and they continue having their bath. Because they know that Sukha's mind is so flawless. But shortly thereafter, Vyasa comes. And the moment Vyasa comes, they all cover themselves up. And Vyasa is surprised. This son of mine is purer than me. And who is Vyasa? Vyasa is the one who has written the Bhagavatam. Vyasa is the one who has written the Mahabharata. He is the one who has codified the Vedas. He is the one who has given us the Upanishads. Such a perfect mind is imperfect in the presence of Sukha Maharishi. And Sukha says, this is me. And I lose myself when I think of the Rasa Leela. I become jealous of the gopis when I think of the Rasa Leela. Don't you understand? It is not mundane. So Sukha reminds him, no, this is the most perfect. When Parikshit says that I have only 7 days to live, I don't know, I'm going to die. What is the best thing to do with life? Imagine this sage who has no attachment, who is established in that unity of divinity. He says, come, I will tell you the story of the Bhagavatam. That is the greatness of Bhagavatam. And while narrating the Bhagavatam, at this point when Rasa Leela comes, he is not able to speak. He is lost in raptures of ecstasy. That is why this Rasa Leela is so very special. So one is Krishna was an 8-year-old boy. The other is Krishna was divine. There's a third point which probably is a corollary of the second. When Krishna is the Supreme Lord, if he chooses to turn his attention towards a group of individuals and give them this joy of the Rasa Leela, can they be ordinary individuals? Can the gopis be ordinary cowherd, unlettered women of the village? Swami says very, very clearly, he says they are jnanis, they are yogis, they are mantra drashtas, they are tattva darshinas, who have taken birth as unlettered women of some obscure village purely to enjoy the proximity of the Lord. Swami would often say, and I'm sure we all would have read, that the fruit of devotion is jnana. When we become more and more centered on bhakti, when we purify our devotion to the Lord, eventually you're given the fruit of wisdom, right? So in our mind, we tend to think that bhakti is lower than wisdom. We tend to think like that. But that bhakti itself is a gift of the quest of wisdom. And an illustration for that are the gopis. Because they were not ordinary folk. They were people who were lost in the thoughts of God who eventually gained this. There's a beautiful conversation, a question and answer between Hislop and Swami where Hislop asks Swami, Swami, what is this sadhana? What is all this sadhana about spiritual exercises? Isn't sadhana empty without love for God? Without love for God, sadhana is merely exercise, right? So only when there is love for God, sadhana is worthwhile. Swami says, yes, perfectly right. Then what is the use of sadhana? Bhakti is most important. Swami says, yes, bhakti is important. But then Hislop asks, but Swami, bhakti is spontaneous. Love for another person is spontaneous. It is there or it is not there. So what about those who don't have that bhakti? And Swami asks Hislop, you feel that you love God? And Hislop says, I think so. How do you think you have come to love God? It is because of the sadhana that you have performed for many, many lifetimes. Today you find the spontaneous love for God in your heart. So the gopis were not ordinary people. They were the most perfect individuals at that point. In fact, this whole drama of the Rasa Leela starts with another episode which Swami uses to drive this lesson of who the gopis were. It all starts with a worship which all the gopis come together and do. It's called the Katyayini Vratam. It's worship to offered to Mother Katyayini. This must have been a tradition. I think I inclined to think that way, that women in the villages might be doing this vratam, those unmarried praying for a good husband, those married praying for the welfare of their husband. It's a vratam which is done for 30 days, a ritual which is followed for 30 days. They wake up before sunrise, they have bath in the river in the cold water, and then they make with sand an image of Mother Goddess, and they worship Mother Goddess by reciting and doing certain things, and it has to be strictly followed for 30 days. But by then the gopis have all given their mind to Lord Krishna. They cannot think of anyone other than Krishna. So when they perform this Katyayini Vratam, they perform it for their master, their Lord Krishna. So it is done in a manner that we want Krishna as our husband. And when we say husband, the word in Sanskrit is pati or natha. And these are words which are used even for God, right? It is not merely a worldly relationship of a wife and a husband. That's why we say Raghupati, we say Pashupati. Shiva is referred to as Pashupati, means he is the master of all beings. So when they say we want Krishna as our pati, it is the most supreme worship to do, that we want the Lord to be our only master. And they very strictly follow this entire vratam for 30 days. And then comes this very famous episode. On the last day, they're all having bath in the Yamuna river. When Krishna sneaks from behind a tree and he steals all their clothes and he hides it away. And then he calls out to them, they're embarrassed. They're without clothes, they're having bath, and this little lad has come, he's taken away all their clothes. So the gopis look at him and they tell him, isn't this adharma? What are you doing, Krishna? Isn't this immoral of what you're doing? Isn't this the greatest of adharma to violate the modesty of women like this? And Swami says, Krishna looks at them and with a frown he says, this is not adharma, what you are doing is adharma. What does he say? He says, Dehabhimanam is the greatest adharma. Body attachment, body consciousness is the greatest adharma that can be done against the Dehi, who is perfect. So he says, this Dehabhimanam that you are showing is the greatest adharma, and I have come to remove that from you. Swami says that at that moment, Krishna has come to remind them of who they really are. That they are not ordinary folk, they are great, great jnanis, great rishis, great tapasvis. So through this incident, Swami says, Krishna comes to wake up that tapasvi from within them. He says, give up this dehabhimanam, this is not your nature. You have come here only to worship me, don't get lost in this. And of course he plays this game and he says, you all come before me and I'll give you your clothes. Again, it looks like a very cruel joke to be played on women by a young boy. But there is a very beautiful significance in this. When we go through life, we hold on to a lot of things. We hold on to people, we hold on to relatives. We feel ashamed if we don't have them. Right? If I don't have a status in society, I feel ashamed of myself. If I don't have money to fulfill all my needs, I feel ashamed of myself. And that was what was represented by these women who were feeling ashamed to come out of the water because they were not having clothes on. And the Lord comes and strips you of all that you feel ashamed of if you don't have in your possession. And Krishna says, why am I doing this to you? He says, you worshipped Katyayani saying that you want me as your pati, as your master. I have acknowledged that prayer. I have accepted that prayer. I want to bless you. But then Krishna says, there are certain flaws in the worship that you have performed. We all do that, you know, we all take up different sadhana. We all know that we want to love Swami, we want to attain Swami. So whatever we know, we pick up. We chant Rudram, there are a million mistakes in the Rudram we chant. We sing bhajans, sometimes we don't know the meaning of the words that we sing. We do meditation, we do vratam, there are many, many mistakes in every aspect of any sadhana that we take up. So Krishna tells there are flaws in your worship. So in order to remove those flaws, in order to make up for those flaws, I am giving you this punishment. You may call it a punishment, but it is actually a reward. What would be incomplete and imperfect otherwise, I am making it perfect by punishing you. So when the Lord comes into our life, when we say, Swami, become my master, and when He starts stripping us of all that we hold dear to us, name, fame, health, money, feel grateful to Him. Feel delighted that yes, my prayer has been accepted. The process has begun. So this is the first step at which the play of Rasalila begins, and Krishna tells them, I am pleased with your worship. I am pleased with your one-pointedness. I am pleased with your focus and devotion. He says, the Purnima of the autumn season, the Kartika Purnima, I will answer your prayer, he says. I will give you what you have asked for. So be ready. The Bhagavatam says, desire is like a seed, right? It never stops. Desire is like a seed that you sow into the ground. The smallest of desire. Right? Swami tells that Chinnakatha, there is this man who has given up everything. He wants to lead a life of a recluse. So what does he do? He goes and he's sitting in the forest. So after some time, I don't know the exact sequence of the events, but he finds that, you know, he needs food to eat, right? He cannot depend completely on others. So he buys a cow. Then he starts milking the cow. Then he keeps the milk. The cat comes and brings it away. So to keep away the cat, he buys a dog. Now to feed all this, you know, he calls his wife to cook for him and all of that. So Swami says it's just one desire. Even the desire to be a renunciant becomes a desire which becomes like a seed. When you sow it, it becomes all of this. The Bhagavatam says any desire, even the most ordinary, most stupid, most mundane, when it is directed towards God, it becomes like a seed which is roasted in fire. It cannot give forth any more desires. So in that manner, the gopis desired for Krishna, and with that desire, all the other desires began to get burnt. So Krishna has reminded the gopis of who they are. They are not ordinary folk. They are these great rishis. They are, in essence, what we refer to as Vedantins. Reminded of a beautiful incident which happened in the old mandir. One day, two boys came to have Swami's darshan. Youngsters, maybe college going boys, early 20s or late teens. They hear about Swami, they travel all the way from a different distant city and they come. So even as they come into the mandir, Swami has already sent word through Seshagiri Rao Garu, a very senior devotee, that two boys will come. When they come, you instruct them to go to Chitravati, have their bath and then come. So Seshagiri Rao is there and he sees these two boys. He says, Swami is instructed, so please go and do the needful and come. So these boys are surprised. How did Swami know that we are coming? So they go to the banks of Chitravati, and even as they prepare for their bath, they start hearing the sounds of anklets. Anklets, sounds of anklets, if it was worn by a small child and running around, you know, there is no, it has a rhythm of its own. It doesn't have a rhythm that we know of, it's a rhythm of its own. That wobbling feet of a small child, and they hear those anklets, they start looking around. And they find two young feet, two childish feet. And they start following it all around the place. This is the description one of the devotees give from what the boys had narrated. So then they go into the water and they find that, you know, there's somebody splashing water on them as though there's a child around which is throwing water on them. And then again they see the two feet which leads them back to the mandir. And there as they come into the compound of the old mandir, Swami is standing there waiting for them. And they drop all their things, their wet clothes, their towel, their bag, and they rush to Swami and hug Swami tightly. And they tell him, seven worlds are searching for you, you thief, you are hiding in this small village. He said, the whole cosmos is searching for you, O Krishna, you are hiding in this small village, unknown to everybody. And they hug Swami so tightly and they're not letting go of Swami. Swami takes a lot of effort to free himself. But the beauty is, apparently the day before, Swami kept telling all the devotees in the ashram, in the old mandir, tomorrow two Vedantins are coming. He said, tomorrow two Vedantins are coming, tomorrow two Vedantins are coming. So they thought, some yogis from the Himalayas with a long beard and hefty personality are going to come. But these were two boys who actually became mad looking at Swami as Krishna. The gopis too were Vedantins like that. That is why on that day when it came, it's an autumn season. Bhagavatam says Krishna uses his yoga maya to make the jasmine flowers blossom. Flowers which are not meant to blossom in that season begin blossoming. And then Krishna plays the flute. If any of you have stood by the side of a flowing river, we all have heard the murmur of the river. It drowns the voice of a person who is standing next to you, isn't it? Here is Krishna standing there. He's playing with his flute. How did the melody of the flute reach the village and go into the house of the gopis? Swami says it was not any ordinary melody, it was not any ordinary song. Swami tells in a very beautiful verse, Vidasaramantatisi Nadarupamuganumarchi Venuvandu Tirugabosi Ganarupamuganumarchi. Speaking about the melody, Swami says, Vedasaramantatisi. What is Vedasaram? The essence of all the Vedas is Vedanta. So Swami says, Vedasaramantatisi Nadarupamuganumarchi. Making it, transforming it into sound, Venu Vandu Tirugabosi, pouring it into this flute, Gana Rupa Muganu Marchi, and converting it into a melody, into a song, he plays the flute. So it is not a sound as we understand it, it is not a melody of a regular flute, it is this Vedasaram, and that reaches the gopis. And when that reaches the gopis, they go mad. They don't know what to do. They are transfixed. Their mind is completely lost. They literally lose all of their ability to think. And it describes there is a gopi which is, there is one gopika who is serving her husband, she drops the vessel and runs. There's one gopika who is feeding her child milk, she drops the child and runs. There's one gopika who is cooking, she leaves everything and runs. There is one which is applying collyrium to her eye, with collyrium in one eye she runs. There is one who is adorning herself with jewels. She wears anklets in her wrists and she wears bracelets in her ankles and she runs. They've completely lost it. Because it is not an ordinary melody. It is quintessentially the call of the Supreme Atma to the Jivatma. And when the mind is clear of all its flaws, when the mind is clear of all its attachments, the call can be heard, isn't it? They're not thinking that, okay, now the call has come, now we have to go, we have to take this route. No, they just drop everything and they run, they're not able to think. Their husbands try to stop them, the mother-in-laws come and try to stop them, their fathers come in their way. Nothing is able to stop them, they just run. And Sukha Maharishi says, there are a few gopikas who get trapped in the house, because the house is already locked. They're not able to go out. And they sit there because the mind has already gone there, right? The mind has already been filled with Krishna. They sit wherever they are and they're lost in the contemplation of Krishna. And in that yearning and in that pain that they're not able to go to Krishna, all their karmas are burnt. And once the karmas are burnt, the sukshma sharira is no more attached to this sthula sharira, right? The body, the spiritual body is not attached to the material body. So they join the Rasalila in their spiritual form. At this point, Parikshit again asks this doubt. He says, see, you have to worship God and you should think of Him as the Supreme, right? You should not think of Him as an ordinary boy, you should not think of Him as a neighbor. You should think of God as the Supreme Lord. But did they think like that? For them it was just another boy, another sweet neighborhood boy, isn't it? How can such thinking of Krishna give them the Supreme? When Sukha Maharishi says all their karmas got burnt in the way they were thinking of Swami, thinking of Krishna, Parikshit has this question. He says, I had to lead a dharmic life. 7 days I'm having to sit and listen about Bhagavatam after being convinced that this is the story of God. Right? He has had the experience of Krishna being the Lord, and because he's convinced that this is the Lord, he is listening to the Lord's story. And that too he has to listen for 7 days. At the end of it, moksha might come. He's still not certain about it, right? But how did the gopis who did not even recognize Krishna as God reach the ultimate? And Sukha Maharishi says, he said, that wretched Sishupala hated the Lord and reached the Lord. Right? The Sishupala hated and he was angry and he was upset with Krishna, but in spite of that, he was thinking of Krishna all the time. When he died, he reached Krishna. What about these people who have nothing but pure love for Krishna? How can they not reach Him? And he says, any emotion, be it vatsalyam, fear, friendship, desire, any of these relationships which are mundane, when it is turned towards God, it has the ability to purify the mind. Going back to the Rasalila, Krishna has played the flute, the gopis come running, and they all come to the banks of Yamuna, where there is a small forest covering. As we said, all the jasmines are blooming, the full moon is shining, and there Krishna is standing, and he says, he's surprised. He says, what are all of you doing here? Is this the right time for you to leave your house and come here? And he starts reprimanding them. He said, how can you leave the duties that you have in your house towards your family and come here? You're supposed to take care of your child. You're supposed to take care of the cows. You're supposed to serve the elders in the family. And Krishna says, I can hear your baby crying. I can hear that cow crying. I can hear the calf which is hungry. Go back and serve all of them. And then Krishna tells, you know, all of this, when you read the Bhagavatam, how How fortunate we all are that we can relate to all of this. Right? In the absence of Swami in our life, I think these would be mere words to us. Right? So Krishna tells them, don't you know that you cannot attain love for me merely through physical proximity? Don't you know, by mere physical proximity, you cannot attain anything. You can attain me by Shravanam, Kirtanam, Darshan and Dhyanam. Not by physical proximity. So it doesn't matter whether you're near me or you're far away from me. If you do all of this, you can attain love for me. So he says, go back. Now, Swami would often say this. The river which is flowing towards the ocean, it faces n number of obstacles on its way. There are mountains, it burrows through the mountains and comes. There are falls, it becomes a waterfall and it continues to flow. There are plains which become expansive, the sun is trying to evaporate it. And in the modern context, we have cities which are built in the course of the river. So many obstructions for the river, but the river keeps flowing and flowing till it reaches its destination, the ocean. It meets many, many obstacles on this path. But Swami says, the final obstacle for the river to reach the ocean is the ocean itself. Because the ocean refuses to accept the river. He says, no, I will not take you. And Swami says, there is a battle between the river and the ocean. The river is praying, O ocean, accept me. See, I have come so far. People worshipped me, people polluted me, people did all kinds of things, but I did not care about all of that. I've been flowing, flowing, flowing to come and reach you. Don't turn me away now. But the ocean says, no, I will not accept you. And Swami says, that is how the, what you call the brackish waters are formed. The river says, there is no going back. There is no concept of going back. We will wait till the turn comes. We will wait till you accept us. And then Swami would very beautifully describe, eventually the ocean says, okay, come. The ocean raises in a huge wave and the river flows under the ocean. The gopis have overcome many, many obstacles, right? Husbands, mother-in-laws, brothers, fathers, elders. Finally, Krishna himself has become an obstacle. He says, go back. I don't want you. Go and serve your husbands, go and serve your parents. Don't come to me. Because that is your duty. If you stray away from your duty, you will not reach the heaven. And then a beautiful conversation or exchange happens between the gopis and Krishna. See, till now, what did Parikshit say? That, gopis did not recognize Krishna as the ultimate. That is not the truth. Because what do the gopikas say? Krishna, aren't you the indweller in every body here? Aren't you the Dehi? You are the Self, right? And any worship which is directed towards you, any service, any love that is directed towards you, doesn't it reach all the beings on this earth and elsewhere? When that is the case, where is this question of we going and serving some people, saying that they belong to us? And they tell Krishna that, the delight which one gets from family, friends, relationships, consorts, wives, husband, they are nothing but pain in the form of pleasure. Don't send us back to them. Gopi says, don't send us back to them. And, the very beautiful analogy they give. He says, if you want to water the leaves of a plant, if you want to water the fruits of a plant, if you want to water the branches of a plant, don't you pour water at the root? They look at Krishna and say, Krishna, you are the Adhara. Everything else, everybody else is only Adheya. You are the fundamental, you are the foundation. Everything else is the base, is based on you. You are the basis. You are the Adhara. Everything else is only an Adheya. And then they say, but all this aside, this mind cannot think of anything else anymore. It has gone mad. The mind has gone mad. The limbs don't listen to us anymore. We cannot cook. We cannot tend to the children. We cannot tend to the cattle. Because the mind has gone mad now. It seeks nothing else. Even if you send us away, we have nothing, nowhere else to go, we have nothing else to do, because the mind is not suitable for anything else anymore. And there's a very beautiful Hindi song where he says, I don't know who is the composer, says, Wo kala ek basuri wala, sud bisra gaya mori re. Sud bisra means I've gone mad. The mind has become unsettled. It is not going to return to its normalcy anymore. Right? As we have quoted many times, Swami tells in the Telugu Padyam, Pichi pogotti, pichi pattinchinu. He removes the madness and he makes you mad. Satchidanandamurti Sai Baba. Kanniru teppinchi, kanniru tappinchi, kanniru teppinchi, Chinmayamurti o Chinni Baba. He says he wipes your tears. He wipes your miseries and then he makes you cry. He removes your madness, then he makes you mad. He removes the madness of all the madness that we all are filled with. Madness for money, for power, for authority, for comfort. And he makes you mad after him. So the gopis say, we become mad. We cannot do anything. And now Krishna smiles and he says, okay, come. And they begin walking towards the banks of the Yamuna. And for a brief moment, the gopis feel, yes, we have succeeded. We have got the Lord, right? We have attained Him. We have made Him ours. And the moment that pride gets into their mind, that among all the millions of women in the world, we are few hundred, we have got our Lord, Krishna vanishes. He goes away. Then they become so restless, they start running from here and there, they don't know what to do. They run to the creepers, they run to the trees, they run to the bushes, they look at the bees, they look at the butterflies. They ask, have you seen our Krishna? Have you seen our Krishna? Where is the Lord? Where is the Lord? Where is the Lord? See, these are all sequence of events which we can relate to very, very deeply, isn't it? What do the gopis do in the absence of the Lord? Krishna has gone away, he's dematerialized himself. Just before, what did the gopi say? This mind cannot do anything else. The mind has been captured by you. So did the gopi say, okay, Krishna is gone, let's go back home. No. The only thing which is filling their mind was Krishna. So they sit down, they talk about Krishna, they sing about Krishna. They start imitating Krishna. They say, hey, do you remember Krishna did this when he was a small child? Do you remember when this asura came, Krishna did this? Do you remember Krishna played this prank? They start acting out all those different pranks which Krishna has done. And they are occupying themselves purely in these thoughts of Krishna. And suddenly one of the gopis notices that Krishna's feet marks are going into one of the forest areas. So they say, see, Krishna's feet is here. So he has gone this way. So they follow the feet. And as they see Krishna's feet, they find that ahead of Krishna's feet are the marks of the feet of Radha. So then they say, oh my God, this Radha has managed to catch Krishna. So many of us are here, but Radha has managed to capture Krishna. So they become very jealous. What is it that she has that we don't have? So they go a little further, and suddenly they find Radha's footsteps have vanished. Of course, they conclude that from this point, Krishna must have carried Radha. Right? But actually, there is a deep inner significance in this. Radha represents the role a guru plays. All of us want to attain God. All of us want to be dear Swami, dear to Swami, right? But among us, there will be one or two who have managed to do that. They become perfect. Their love becomes so perfect that they manage to get Lord whom we are not able to get. Right? The Lord whom we are not able to see, there are some people who have managed to see even now. And at a certain point when Radha's feet marks vanish, it means that she has actually become one with the Lord. It is not that Krishna is carrying Radha, she has become one with the Lord. She is no more a separate entity. But they walk further, and whom do they find? They see Radha sitting there. And of course, she tells a story. She says, you know, I was going with Krishna, but at one point I felt how lucky I am. I managed to get Krishna, and Krishna vanished. But actually what it means is, the guru who has attained the ultimate, who knows how to attain the ultimate, who no more has body consciousness, holds on to body consciousness to come back and teach us the way. I have attained the Lord, let me teach you how to do that. So Radha comes back to the gopis, and she pretends to search for Krishna along with the gopis. Right? That's what the guru does, isn't it? He also does the sadhana, he also does the bhajan. Because he is teaching the means of attaining the Lord the way the guru has attained, the way Radha has reached. So what happens in the Bhagavatam, this part is referred to as the Gopi Geetam, where all the Gopikas sit down and they start singing songs in praise of Krishna. The many, many verses, very beautiful description of Krishna, very poetic. And even today it's a tradition that young children are taught this Gopi Geetam. It is believed that it gives you the supreme, I mean, we tend to use it the way we want, right? It is believed that it will give you a good husband. But what it's meant to give is the ultimate Purusha himself as your husband. So they sing this Gopi Geetam, and as they are lost in these thoughts of Krishna, suddenly Krishna appears again. And immediately, the moment Krishna appears, all the mood changes. Everybody is laughing, everybody is jumping. They don't know what to do. They hug Krishna, they pull his leg. They don't know how to show their happiness. And then finally Krishna says, okay, come. Let us go to the banks of Yamuna. Let us go to the sands of Yamuna. And they sit there. Actually, it is at this point the Rasalila really begins. Because Krishna is sitting there. They all sit around Krishna. It so happens that each gopi is actually feeling that Krishna's feet is on her lap. One gopi is feeling Krishna's hand is around her neck. One is holding the hand. Hundreds of gopikas, each one is holding a hand, each one is feeling an arm around their shoulder. But each one is thinking that Krishna is actually sitting beside them. But Krishna is talking playfully to all of them. And at this point, a very beautiful conversation occurs, where the gopis ask Krishna, he said, tell us about this. There are some people in the world who can show affection and love and care only to those who show affection, care in return. There are some people who are able to love only those who love them in return. Whereas there are some other people who can love even those who are indifferent. Even if they don't find love coming in return, they're able to love that person. And there are a few others who are not able to show affection to anybody, either to those who love them or to those who hate them. Why is it so? Who are these three categories of people? This is the question they ask Krishna. And Krishna tells, see, those who love for love in return, they are the most selfish. Because it is actually self-love which is actually coming as loving another person. You are loving and showing affection to another person because you're getting something in return. There's a small joke that somebody was saying. There was this young teenage boy who was going out with his girlfriend. And we typically know, you know, generally fathers, they always wonder, what is it there in this fellow that somebody is liking this boy? Right? Because the father only knows all the flaws. So the father calls the teenage son. He said, what does that girl see in you that she wants to hang out with you? She go out with you. So the son says, oh, she finds me fun, cool to hang out with, and very smart and charming. Father says, okay, but what is it that you like in her? What I like in her is that she finds me fun to hang out with, cool and charming. So this is precisely how most of us love each other, right? If you actually look at it, there are so many people we take a liking for because they like us. Because they respect us. Because they show affection to us, we find it easier to show affection to them. So Krishna says, there is no virtue in this love. The second category are those who are able to show love and affection even to the indifferent. Then Krishna says there is virtue in this. There is dharma and sauhridam in this. Sauhridam is friendship. In this relationship, because there is no give and take. See, when Krishna says loving even those who are indifferent, the unsaid part is they love those who love them also. So which means your love is independent of the other person liking you or not. So your love has become more expansive. So when a person is capable of such love, it is a sign of virtue. Right? That's what Krishna says. Then about those who cannot show affection and love to both categories. Krishna says either they should be sages. They should be a sage. They should be completely detached from the world of likes and dislikes. They do not find any reason to love somebody or not love somebody. They're beyond all that. Or they should be a Jivan Mukta. A Jivan Mukta is one who is completely self-satisfied. We are constantly in search of approval and applause, right, from all others around. One who is self-satisfied, who's completely in that state of self-satisfaction, does not look around for applause, for love, for affection. So he says either he must be completely detached like a sage, or he must be a Jivan Mukta, or he must be a fool. It's an important thing. He says, the greatest of jnanis and a fool sometimes appear the same. Isn't it? So Krishna says either he must be the greatest or he must be the worst. He must be a fool. But then Krishna goes on to say, but I do not belong to any of these categories. He says, I do not belong to any of these categories. And then Krishna says, just see what I did to you. I gave you a taste of my love and I vanished. Right? He gave us a taste of his love, of his presence, and he vanished. Then Krishna says, never at the moment when I vanished, I stopped loving you. Krishna tells them, I became invisible to you, but your love did not become invisible to me. And I was seeing what you were doing in my physical absence. When I removed myself from you, I was seeing what you were doing. And I saw that you were lost in songs of me, talking about me. You were lost in satsang. Right? And Krishna says, I am pleased. And then Krishna pleads. He said, don't start hating me for leaving you like this. Because I never cease to love. And then Krishna says, you know, you have broken all your bondages. You have given up all your dharmas. And you have come seeking only me. And Krishna says, even in many, many lifetimes, I will not be able to repay this obligation that I have. He says, there's no way I can return it because you have shown so much love to me. And he tells, don't hate me because I vanished. Because I vanished purely for the reason that you will crave more for me. That in craving your love for me will increase. That is all is my reason for vanishing away. Don't hate me for that. But in truth, I will never be able to repay this obligation that I have for you. And so saying begins what we refer to as the Rasalila or the Rasa Krida. Now Krishna calls all of them and they start dancing. The description is it's in a circle. Between two Gopikas there is one Krishna. But the Gopikas don't realize it. They think that Krishna is by their side. There's one Krishna and that Krishna is by their side. But the reality is, you know, they're holding Krishna. They're holding Krishna's left hand in their right and right hand in their left. But actually it is the right hand of one Krishna and the left hand of the other Krishna. They think it is the same Krishna and they're holding and they're dancing. It is basically Krishna's yoga maya in full play to just give that joy. What has actually happened is every day whenever there was a dance like this on the banks of the river, it was only Radha who had this opportunity. And having come back, Radha has taught each one of the gopis how to be a Radha. And where there is Radha, there must be Krishna. So when each one of these gopis became a Radha, Krishna had to manifest again and had to dance with them. And he gives them the joy. It goes on, the story goes that many, many nights are lived in that one night. Why? Because this is a sign for the heavens, this is a sight for the heavens to see. All the celestial beings, the devas, and all come to see this scene. The moon stops. The movement of the moon and the sun is what marks time, isn't it? The moon and the galaxies stop looking at this scene. And they remain like that for many, many days. Till Krishna keeps dancing and dancing and dancing. And this is how that Rasa Leela goes on for many, many, many days. And everybody in the village do not realize that the Gopikas are away. So Sukha Maharshi gives this entire description of the Rasa Leela. In between, he is lost so many times in ecstasy, he is not able to narrate. But still Parikshit is having his doubts. Parikshit says, "But Master, isn't it immoral? Isn't it adharma?" See, Parikshit is a great devotee, nevertheless. Thanks to Parikshit, we know the story, right? We have received the Bhagavatam because Parikshit was like the calf which made Sukha Maharshi milk the cow. So Parikshit is definitely, we are nobody to point fingers at Parikshit. But we should appreciate where Parikshit's concern comes from. Parikshit is a king. A king is concerned about dharma in society. That is his primary task, to establish dharma in society. And Parikshit is spoken of as the king who comes in the cusp of Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. So he strives very hard to stop the influence of Kali in his kingdom, the adharma that Kali can spread. So when he hears this whole thing, he says, "But Krishna has come for dharma sthapana. How can he dance with the women who belong to other men? How is this right? I still am not able to get my mind around it. How is this, how could this ever be right?" Then Sukha Maharshi gives a couple of very, very important points, very, very important explanations. He says, see, goes back to the same point, we are talking about the Lord. We are talking about Ishvara. He says, one who is so supremely powerful, sometimes he will do acts which you and I cannot understand with our understanding of right and wrong. He says that is a gift given to those who are supremely powerful. And Vyasa, Sukha gives an example. He says, see, when you and I eat, we choose what we eat, right? We eat good food. If the food has become stale, we don't eat it. If the fruit is rotten, we don't eat it. But the fire can eat everything. The fire is supremely powerful. It gorges everything. It doesn't see this is corpse. It doesn't see this is prasadam. It doesn't see this is a fresh leaf. When the fire is in its full might, it swallows everything. There is no right and wrong, good and bad for fire. He says, for Ishvara, there is nothing like good and bad. Then he says, see, you can look at the Lord and you can want to live like Him. You could be a devotee of Lord Shiva, Lord Rudra, but you cannot take the hala hala, can you? But He can, because He is supremely powerful. And then he explains that, see, when the Lord comes in a human form like this, His words have to be followed implicitly. Among the actions that He performs, you have to only follow those actions which are in concurrence with the words that He speaks. The words have to be followed implicitly, but only those actions, you have to use your discrimination to pick out those actions which can be followed. If you don't do this and if you blindly imitate whatever the Lord has done, you will only ruin your mind. I'm reminded of an interesting episode that happened to one of my classmates. This boy had finished his studies and he was hoping that Swami will allow him to stay here. He was waiting for Swami to give him that opportunity. So one day Swami calls him for an interview and Swami says, "Look, it is best that you go out and serve your parents and you live with them, take up a job outside." So this boy cried, he made a scene. The problem with Swami is you don't know when Swami is testing, right? When he's serious and when he's testing you, you never know. Like it happened with the Gopikas. He said, no, all of you go back. Right? So when Swami comes and says, no, all of you go, we don't know whether he's testing or he's seriously telling. There are occasions when Swami will come and tell, no, Intikvel Pondi, all of you go home. Then we will smile and say, no Swami. And Swami will have to say, no, I'm not testing you, I'm seriously telling you. Test chetam ledu, jajanga chiptunnanu. I'm not testing you, I'm really telling you, this is my command. Because we don't even know how to recognize the Lord's test. So this boy was, you know, saying, no Swami, I want to be with you. Then finally Swami convinces him, no, see, this is what is good for you, you have to go. Then in the course of that interview, Swami said, go, you know, take up a good job and get married. Your parents want you to get married. So this boy said, Swami, I'll go take up a job, but I will not get married. Swami said, no, don't say like that. Your parents will be happy. It is good. You can lead a good life, a dharmic life and all that Swami was saying. So this boy was giving all kinds of arguments. Everything was being shot down. And then this boy says, Now when I think of it, I don't know how I had the courage to say this to Swami, but somehow that day I told it. So he looked at Swami and said, Swami, you say your life is your message. We have to follow whatever you have done. Swami is not married, so I will also not marry. And after he uttered it, it struck him, oh my God, what a thing to tell Swami. And Swami said, hey. He got scared. But then the description, I mean, the answer which Swami gave was so beautiful and so profound. Swami told him, do you know how I used to call my mother? Do you know how I used to address Ishwaramma? I used to call her Griham Ammai. Ammai means small girl. Griham Ammai means a small girl who's in the house. So Swami said, I saw my own parents as my children. That is the state I am in. If you are in that state, you can do whatever I am doing. He says, I saw my own parents as my children. That is the state from which all my actions come. Don't follow whatever I have done blindly. Whatever I say has to be followed. Among the actions that the Lord performs, you have to discriminate and pick up those actions which are concurrent with what Swami says and only follow them. And then finally, the other argument which Sukha gives, again very beautiful, he says, you talk of sin and merit. You talk of papa and punya. How does papa and punya attach to an individual soul? Right? I do so many actions. How do those bad actions attach to me and come back to me in my next birth? I do a lot of good actions. How is it that they come back to me? It is because of body consciousness. Right? It's because you believe that you are this one individual. Only when you are fixated in this idea of individual consciousness, sin and merit attach yourself to you. And then Sukha says, the yogi whose mind is dissolved in the Lord, sin and merit cannot touch him. And you're asking, what about sin and merit to the Lord? This is a very beautiful story. Maybe we'll end with that. It's a very beautiful story again in the Bhagavatam, where one day sage Durvasa, he comes to where Krishna is living. Krishna's palace is on one side of the river and Durvasa sets up camp on the other side of the river. So Krishna calls Rukmini and tells Rukmini that, see, sage Durvasa has come. You should go and serve him. So prepare a meal and go and serve Durvasa. So Rukmini is very happy. So she prepares a very elaborate meal. And then she goes. And when she goes to the banks of the river, she finds that the river is in spate. And there is no boat or there is no boatman who will take her across the river. So she comes back to Krishna. And she tells Krishna, the river is in spate. How do I cross? So Krishna tells her, you go to river and tell, O Mother Yamuna, Nitya Brahmachari Krishna wants to send this food to Durvasa, please part way. Nitya Brahmachari means one who is ever celibate. Krishna is telling Rukmini, go and tell the river, Nitya Brahmachari Krishna wants to send this food to Durvasa, give way. And who is Rukmini? Wife of Krishna. So Rukmini thinks, I am done now. The river might swallow me also for uttering this lie. So she goes anyway, Krishna has told. She goes there. She goes in front of the river and she says, O Mother Yamuna, Nitya Brahmachari Krishna has asked me to serve Durvasa, please part and give way. And instantly the waters of Yamuna part and give way. And she's surprised. She said, how is Krishna the Nitya Brahmachari? How is he a celibate? I am his wife and I am not the only wife. That's even worse. Nevertheless, she crosses the river. She goes on to the other side. Sage Durvasa is sitting there and she serves the sage. The sage has a hearty meal. He eats up everything that she has brought and he belches loudly. And then Rukmini goes to Durvasa and says, O sage, I came across the river, but the river is in spate. How do I go back now? So Durvasa looks at her and says, go to the river and tell, O Mother Yamuna, Nitya Upavasi Durvasa has sent me to cross the river. Upavasi is one who is fasting. Nitya Upavasi is one who is always fasting. And Rukmini says, I just now heard you belch. I just now served you food. There Krishna is saying, Nitya Brahmachari, here this man has just eaten the hearty meal that I've taken a half a day to prepare. And he's saying, Nitya Upavasi Durvasa is asking me to cross the river. So she goes to the river. She says, Mother Yamuna, Nitya Upavasi Durvasa has sent me. The river parts. She crosses and she goes to Krishna and she says, what is this, Krishna? You are saying Nitya Brahmachari and he's saying Nitya Upavasi. Then Krishna says, the one who is firmly established in the self is not related to what the body does. The body eats, the body sleeps, the body dies. The self has nothing to do with it. So the one who is constantly established in the self, Brahmachari means that. One who is constantly in the state of Brahman. So Krishna says, I am a Nitya Brahmachari. Can you deny that fact? So Rukmini says, no, I can't. What about Durvasa? Durvasa says, Nitya Upavasi. Upavasi means one who is constantly in the presence of the Lord. Upa means near, Vasa means to stay. So Upavasi is one who is constantly close to God. Even he does not have any body consciousness. Nitya Brahmachari and Nitya Upavasi. Once we were talking to a devotee from Uti. So she was telling us how when Swami would come to Uti and Swami used to stay in their house. A couple of days before Swami would come, she would go, she'd take the car, drive to a nearby coffee estate, buy fresh coffee beans, come home, fry those coffee beans, and she would say, as a, like a ritual, because Swami was fond of coffee. So she used to make that coffee and fresh coffee powder ready for Swami's coffee. And Swami would come and invariably, she would say that there are times when Swami would come at 1 o'clock in the night. Dinner would be ready, Swami would say, no, I don't want dinner, coffee. So when we were speaking to this auntie, we told her, auntie, do you know, when Swami used to talk to us, Swami would tell us, I have never drunk coffee in my life. I have personally heard it so many times from Swami. Coffee, tea, nenu eppudu tagaledu. I have never drunk coffee and tea in my life. So when we told this to that devotee, for a moment her heart skipped a beat. She must have remembered all the trouble she took to make that coffee for Swami. But the next instant she said, but Swami is saying the right thing. He never drinks, he never eats, he never sleeps. He is not that body. Right? So when the Lord comes in a human form, there are some actions that he performs that need to be followed. But there are some leelas that he performs which are like this, which are for listening, which are for sharing. And among such leelas, the Rasa Leela is supposed to be the supreme. It is supposed to be the greatest. And that's why this chapter in the Bhagavatam, Sukha Maharshi ends by saying that, he says, those who with reverence hear the events of the Rasa Leela in the right order, and those who narrate it, they will be blessed with supreme bhakti. They will become master of their self before long. And they will soon overcome lust and desire. That is the power of this Rasa Leela. And when you look at all the sequence of events, we can see it is what Swami is playing in our lives, isn't it? We've all turned to Swami in some way or the other. We have sought Him, we have sought His presence, we have sought His love. When troubles come our way, remember, He is actually stealing our clothes. He's stealing those things that we hold on dear to and saying that without this, I will not be able to go in the presence of other people. Right? It's not clothes. We have a huge list. Right? It's not just clothes. Respect, honor, all of these things. And when each one of these things get hurt in our life, let's remind ourselves, I prayed for this. God, I'm grateful for this. And then He gives a call. Right? Then He gives a call when you go to Him. He gives us a taste of that presence and He vanishes. And when He vanishes, it's an opportunity to grow in craving, and He is watching. What are you doing in His absence? Are you lost in His thoughts? Are you singing His glories? Are you talking about Him? Are you occupied with Him? And when He is pleased, when all the flaws in the mind are removed by this craving, when everything gets burnt up, He will make His presence felt. Eventually, the essence is that there is a Radha in each one. There was a Radha in each Gopika, there is a Radha in each one of us. Maybe Krishna is playing the flute, we are not able to hear it. Right? We are not able to hear it. It can be heard only when that purity is there, only when we have that purity. There was this incident where two students from Swami's college, two girl students, both of them were interested in painting. I'll conclude in 2 minutes, I'm sorry. Both of them were interested in art. So the younger girl, she had made a beautiful painting of a scenery and she showed it to Swami. And Swami said, no, this is not how I should see painting. You take it far away, I'll see from far. So they went to the end of the interview room and they showed it to Swami. And Swami said, oh, very nice, very nice. And then Swami explained how you should paint. Swami said, first, you should take a picture of a scenery and you should learn to paint it. Then you should be able to sit in front of the scenery as it is and then paint it. Eventually, you should be able to close your eyes, imagine the scenery and paint it. And Swami said, when you do that, what you are painting has become part of you. Right? Swami is giving painting lessons, you may think. At the end of it, Swami looked at one of these girls and said, paint me every day. He says, paint me every day. We've all worshipped God in a picture. We've all worshipped God in a form. Now is the time when we can close our eyes and be able to worship Him even though He is not there. Right? When that happens, He has become part of the mind. He has become part of you. And it can never happen unless that heart is pure. And Swami would say, what do? Where do you find love? Where do you find that pure love? Is it available in any market? Is it available in any temple? No, it is not. Swami says, the only thing is, you can pray to God saying, God, give me that love. God, give me that love. And that's why Swami would often say, that was why what the gopis prayed for was the perfect prayer. That was the perfect prayer, Swami would say, when they sang,
ప్రేమరహిత మరుభూములలు ప్రేమాంకురములు పెంపుందా ప్రేమావేశముతో.
ప్రేమరహిత మరుభూములలో ఇసే స్వామి, దిస్ హార్ట్ ఇస్ ఎ బ్యారెన్ ల్యాండ్, ఇట్ డస్ నాట్ హ్యావ్ లవ్, ఇట్ ఇస్ లైక్ ఎ బ్యారెన్ ల్యాండ్. ప్రేమరహిత భూములలో ప్రేమాంకురములు, he said, you sow the seeds of love. There is no love in this heart. You sow the seeds of love. Premankuramulu pempunda, so that I might reap the harvest of love. Premaveshamuto, with love, please do it.
Premarahita marubhumulalu, premankuramulu pempunda, premaveshamuto. ప్రేమ సుధా వర్షము వర్షింపగ ప్రేమ నదులు ప్రవహింపగ మురళి గానము సేయగదే.
ప్రేమ సుధా వర్షము వర్షింపగ, లెట్ ద రెయిన్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ ఫ్లో, లెట్ ద రెయిన్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ కమ్ ఆన్ దిస్ హార్ట్. ప్రేమ నదులు ప్రవహింపగ, సో దట్ ద స్ట్రీమ్ ఆఫ్ లవ్ ఫ్లోస్ in such a manner. Ganamu seyyagare, O Krishna, will you not sing a song which fills this love in this heart of mind? And Swami would say, this is the best prayer to make. Having come to the Lord, having seen His form, having craved for Him, there's nothing else worth asking, right? We should be able to look at Swami and say, Swami, enough. We've had enough of all of these relationships. We've had enough of all these bondages. We have tasted your love. Every pleasure in this world has become insipid to us now. It does not give us any pleasure. And we should refuse to go back and say, till you come and till you do the ras with us, we will not go. These few words... Thank you all for your very patient listening. I most humbly offer this talk at Swami's lotus feet.